I'd like to first, I was pointing out I did phrase things a little incorrectly, so I just want to make sure to correct that. So we looked at, so the sitter space, which can be represented as an hyperbola like this. And really, it's not the right wording to say that this is static. This is not static. This metric does depend on time. The same way the flat slicing, just half of it, the metric depends on time. So this is the flat slicing here. But what happens in the sitter space is that there is a time translation symmetry. So in that sense, it's not really, if you just take the sitter space, it's not really evolving in many ways. And in fact, there is a slicing, the static slicing, as you worked out yesterday in the tutorial, there is a slicing where the metric actually does not change in time at all. So for an observer, you can write your metric in a way that you don't see any time evolution. This is this is because you have a time translation. So when we actually do cosmology, we end up breaking that time symmetry. So we're going to break time diffeomorphism. And this is how we're going to get evolution. Okay, you can do it by either like non-perturbative effect, like bubbles, like Matt will do later in the class, or we'll do inflation, where we assume now that the Hubble constant, the size here of the sitter space, will now take that instead to be constant, but to actually vary in time. Okay. All right. So we studied a flat slicing. The metric in the flat slicing is just minus one over. This and the Mohn equation in this slicing was just that when we did the massless field, and for the massless field, it's just k squared minus 2 over eta squared dk. All right, and the solution, simple, is 1 over k to the 3 half eta 1 minus ik eta times e to the ik eta. All right, so these are our modes in the sitter. You can take any of these or complex conjugate. Okay. This choice of mode actually is the Bunch Davy, so-called the Bunch Davy choice of vacuum. Bunch Davy's choice of vacuum. Or just Bunch Davy's vacuum. Okay. There's a lot of good reason to choose this vacuum. Okay, let me explain to you a little bit these reasons, right? So first of all, as we said last time, there's a good division of scales here in these modes, which are the super Hubble and sub Hubble, or also called super horizon. So super horizon and sub horizon. So sub horizon means minus k eta is much greater than 1. The way to think of this is that if you think of physical length, like last time, this is really 1 over h minus k eta. Okay, so eta is always negative, right? So the conformal, this runs from minus infinity to 0. So this is a positive number. So when this is much greater than 1, then the physical length of the perturbation, the wavelength, is going to be smaller than 1 over h. So we have small perturbation well inside the horizon. While super Hubble or super horizon is the opposite limit, in which case, so again, this is 1 over h, and then you have these large wavelength perturbations. All right. So the idea of the Bunch-Davies vacuum is that, in the sub horizon limit, the sub Hubble limit, these modes just reduce to the flat space one. So in this limit, vk just becomes 1 over k e to the ik eta. Okay, which have been our nice flat space limit. Another way to think about this is just fix k, fix for some co-moving wave number k. So some you have a fluctuation with this k, and look what happened to that fluctuation in the infinite pass. So as eta goes to minus infinity, then for a fixed k, when you take this limit, then you automatically have this satisfy, and again you get the flat space answer. So the Bunch-Davies vacuum is really saying for every mode k, at the beginning of inflation or at minus infinity. Here, we're assuming there's no beginning, really, just went on forever. But back at minus infinity in time, we all started in the vacuum of flat space. Okay. This is, so that's, you know, makes sense. Also, I mean, if you're gonna do the usual quantum field theory, in quantum field theory, you know, in your class, you have done like UV regularizations. You know that there are UV divergences in quantum field theory, and you need to do renormalization to take care of them. This was always done essentially using these kind of modes. This is how we do, you know, the UV stuff is, you know, you never cared about. You never had both positive and negative frequency in your field expansion. And so we know that if you choose a bunch of these vacua and you take really small scale, very short scale, much smaller than the horizon, then all the things you've known about UV regularization and everything will just carry over. This is the usual behavior that we take when we're in flat space. So, you know, we won't have to do anything more to this. Okay? So these are good things, but still, it is an arbitrary choice. You could say I want to choose something different. And really, at the end of the day, it's the experiment should tell us what the vacuum was at the beginning of inflation. It's not, we shouldn't just, you know, so it is an arbitrary choice. So if you're doing very general things, you should leave it as an unknown, and you should try to use the CMB data to determine whether you were close or not close to bunch JVs. When, you know, so that's really the best philosophy to have. Right, so let me just say, yeah, and there's two more things about the bunch JVs back here. Very good. One is that minimize the Hamiltonian. So that's what you would call the normally you say it's the least excited state. And minimize the Hamiltonian at a given time. Say it or not. So that's one good thing, or one aspect that you may like about it. The other one is also, it is essentially the adiabatic vacua. So remember last time I briefly defined the adiabatic vacua. The idea was, the adiabatic vacua is I look at omega prime over omega square. So this is omega k square. Okay. So let's look at the variation in time of omega k. Okay. So for inflation, well, you can just take the derivative. You find that this is minus 2 over eta cube times omega cube. Okay, and so if I look in the past when eta goes to minus infinity, then when eta goes to minus infinity, omega goes to a constant, okay, and this ratio goes to zero. So omega goes to k, and omega prime goes to zero. So in the far past, the metric is actually very slowly changing. It starts essentially as eta goes minus infinity. You start in flat space, and as time evolves, the frequencies start changing slowly. So you can do an adiabatic approximation in the center space, and if you do that, then the vacua will be the bunch Davies, because that's the one which starts in flat space, and as eta evolves, it gets start being a bit different, and this is the, you know, the different piece here. Okay, so there's many ways to arrive at the bunch theories, but it's a choice. So in the homework this week, you will explore the possibility that there's a beginning to inflation. So you start in a radiation era, and then inflation starts at some time eta naught, and then you'll see that actually, if you define the vacuum and the radiation era to just be the flat space one, you'll find that when you start inflation, you have particles. And it makes sense. You started in a radiation-dominated universe. There were a particle there. And so when you start inflation, there's particles. So you're not starting in the bunch of these vacuum. But one of the things you can show, this is not one of the questions in the homework, but once you've done the homework, next time on Monday, I'll show you. I mean, you can probably see it very easily. You can show that for a given mode, if the time of inflation, as you take the time where inflation started, further in the past, you can see that your bunch Davies vacuum naturally arises. That is, you erase all of the particle that you had before, and you get more and more into the bunch series vacuum. Sorry, I'm not sure if that was super clear, but I'll come back into this on Monday. The idea is just that it's sort of an attractor, and this is typical with inflation. It's an homogenizer. It gets rid of stuff. You're inflating space-time, so all these particles are going away. So even if you don't start in the bunch Davies vacuum, if you wait long enough, you'll end up in the bunch Davies vacuum if you have enough of inflation. Or more and more modes would behave as if they were in the bunch Davies vacuum. Alrighty. Okay, so now let's look. Let's see, what do I want to do here? Here is what I want to do. Okay. Right. So now let's look. So this is kind of just flat space. This is the case which is interesting, so let's look at it more in detail. So these are the super horizon mode. So what happened when you take this limit? First of all, these modes have a negative frequency. If you're in the limit where a negative frequency square, sorry, omega square is negative when you're in this limit. So technically, these are not really harmonic oscillators anymore. They're really they're tachyonic. So they don't oscillate. Okay, so modes do not oscillate. Modes k which satisfy this constant, this constraint at a given time, do not oscillate. Okay, their amplitude is going to be frozen to some value. I mean frozen in the sense that it doesn't oscillate. Now it might still decay or grow by. So it's not really, I guess, frozen here. It just means it's not oscillating. Okay. Later on, we'll discuss the case where it literally does not change, where it's very, it's really frozen. Here you'll see actually that this is for a scalar field, generally for a scalar field indicator, it's not frozen, but it does not oscillate. So these are great modes to, these are the thing. Maybe this could be our initial perturbations. Well, let's look at the two-point function. See what it looks like. So in the BD vacua, I can calculate the two-point function for, say, chi square. And let's take it at the same time. So I have two modes. So chi here is my scalar field. This is the one that's canonically normalized. And I can just evaluate this. This is in BD vacua, which means that these guys here, this is BD, which is annihilated by the A minus defined by this choice of mode function. So this is equal to 0. All right. So, well, you just go and you can plug the mode expansion for this, use a computation relation, the usual thing, and you just get VK. Okay. Factor is 1/2 is because of that weird 1 over square root of 2 that you kind of keep using. But, if you don't have that square root of 2, then it'll just be just the modes here. So this is the two-point function for the Fourier mode chi of k. And now I'm dropping all the vectors, right? Because again, we are in isotropic space, so it just depends on the norm. All right, so what is this? So this is 1 over 2 k cubed eta square times, so you get 1 minus I k eta times 1 plus I k eta. So this is 1 minus or 1 plus k eta square. And that's it. This is at equal time, okay? And then we recognize, so this is the flat space piece. And we see that this guy here is called the growing mode. Okay. And it is growing because as the future, as you're going forward in time, this eta here is going towards 0, so this piece grows. This one does not because the eta square cancels. So in flat space, you don't have a growing mode. You just have the 1 over k, this thing is just 1 over k, or just 1 over k. But in the sitter, you have a growing mode. Okay. Often we write this, though, I square, and phi, I remind you, chi is a times phi. So in chi square, then you just divide by a, so by a square, so you get actually this guy, which is more what usually people quote.
And then if you look at phi, this guy is really, it's not growing, it's really constant, but we still call it the growing mode, this one here. The growing component. Yes? Because it's a correlation function between, well, yeah, I should call it 1 point because, I'm, but yeah, it's just, this is chi k at, say, one time eta, chi k at some another time. So it's a 2 point, it's a two correlator function, but I'm taking them at the coincidence limits, or okay, really, it's at 1 point. No, actually, this is a good point. It's a bad name because really you could say this is a single operator, chi square, and this is the 1 point function of chi square. That would be perfectly fine. But often also we don't take the coincidence limit, so when we take them at a different point. Yep. All right. So this k cube here is the going to be the source of scale invariance. For the power spectrum, so it's kind of very important. Let's see what happens for the two-point function, this time in real space. Okay. Again, I will take both the coincidence limit and I'll do it at a different point too. Right. So let me write this. So this is the phi of x, phi of y is really just the Fourier transform of this guy. Okay. And you could do it for chi, but let me move directly now to phi. So this is just d3k of u. So it, you remember, I call the modes for these guys u. And I call the modes for these guys v. They're just related by a scale factor. So this is uk star, say, eta 1, uk star, uk eta 2. Then you have this. And they should be 2 pi cubes. I'll skip the 2 pi's if you don't mind. I think there's too many. At the end, I'll put them back. But yeah, 2 pi cube here. And you get, because each mode is defined with a 2 pi to the 3 half, and so you have two of those, so you get 2 pi cube. Note that because I have a symmetry, this is only always a function of the difference here between these guys. So you can always write this. You can always write this by, you can integrate over the angle. And so you can always write this as dk k squared, the two modes, u star u, times the sine, where L is the norm of that vector. So what you do here, you just you divide this into a norm and an angle, you integrate over the angle, you'll get a sine and kl. Okay, so this is the two-point function in general in real space. Okay, and factors of now I've integrated over angle, so I get a factor of 4 pi. So that's, I don't know, 2 pi square. Doesn't matter. And actually, also I should actually, even worse, there's an extra factor of 1/2 because this guy. Okay. What did I do here? So let's look at what this correlation. So this is let's look at what happens to these correlation function in real space. I have plenty of room. What am I doing? Oh no, I try. Yeah, that's right. Let me not use that corner. It's a bit hard to see. So right. So let's see the coincidence limit first of all. In which case, my 2 point becomes a 1 point. So, so L goes to 0, eta 1 equal eta 2. Then the 2 point at the coincidence limit is just the integral dk, k square, uk. Okay, and from now on, I'll drop the factors of 2 and 2 pi's. Okay, you can put them back in. Okay, so. So this guy, in general, will have UV divergence because I'm taking the coincidence limit. So for example, if you do it for flat space, and let's put a mass in for the moment, so mass not equal to 0, then this is just dk k square, and the modes here is just 1 over omega
So each mode in flat space goes like 1 over square root of omega, k. So this is k squared plus m squared.
Okay. And this integral has two regimes. There's one where m, approximation sign, m to infinity, so when k is much greater than m, then I have dk or times k. And then when I have from this one, in which case I have dk times k squared. Okay. This guy is as the standard quadratic divergence of flat space. It's the usual techniques of renormalization applies. You can reabsorb this quadratic divergence into a redefinition of the mass. Okay. So this would lead to a renormalization of the mass, the usual story. We're not going to work this out, but you should have seen this. And this is just a small contribution, which is perfectly finite, well-behaved, just goes like the mass. OK? Now let's do the sitter. So the sitter, there's two pieces, but we don't care about the flat space I just did. So let's look just at the growing piece. Then the two-point function goes like dk k squared h squared over k cubed, which is just an integral, which is now divergent both in the UV and in the IR. Okay. So this is both, and this is divergent like logs. So this is the log divergence in terms of a UV cutoff, and there would be a log divergence in terms of some infrared cutoff. So what's going on here? So what's going on is that we are summing. They're like, we're creating all these long wavelengths. They have their amplitude is frozen, so it's constant. It's h squared over k cubed. So they all have the same amplitude, and we're just adding them up. As we're adding an infinite number of things which all have the same amplitude, I'm getting infinities. Okay. So now the UV, again, the UV, you can do it, and you can take care of the UV in many ways. There are many different methods. You could do dim reg, which is dimensional regularization, polyvillars, blah, blah, blah. You know, point splitting, blah, blah, blah. You can do also, and that's a little bit less elegant, but it works, just put the brute force cutoff in the integral, lambda UV, say. For the moment, let me just do that. The point is just that it's cutoff, okay? So one thing that's interesting to know is that you have to be careful when you do this is not the best way to do it. Really, these two would be better. But you have to realize that what's cut off is not the k, which is a co-moving momenta, but rather it's p, the physical momenta, which is k over a. That's the thing that you should demand is less than your uv cutoff. So you should demand it physical. You should just be careful between physical and co-moving if you use a cutoff like this. And now, okay, and so now technically this is infinity, which is not a very, very useful answer. It's infinity even after I deal with the UV stuff because of the infrared divergence. But let's say there is a beginning to inflation. Let's say that inflation did not actually last forever. Then that means that there should be a minimum k. So because there's a maximum size, so there's a maximum wavelength, and so there's a minimum wave number. So we'll demand that k is greater than, say, some 1 over L band notation, L prime. Doesn't really matter. So where this would be the initial size in co-moving coordinate, initial size of, say, the inflating universe. So now if I impose these two cutoff, then this just becomes 1 over L prime times lambda UV times the scale factor A of eta dk dk. And so you get, and there's an h square, so you get the very important result, which Matt will use much more than I will, that h square goes like log of A.
plus some constant.
Okay. So this one, so the flat space was giving an infinity, which we UV regularize, and then some constant, which is of order of the mass. So nothing's really special. The sitter now gave us also an infinities, which we also deal by renormalizing our coefficients, but it gives us also a growing component. There's also some constant, but there's a piece here which grows with time.
Okay. This, if I write it in terms of the FRW of time, which is kind of more useful, so I remember that in inflation, E is equal to HT, if I use the standard FRW versus compare, which is this. So if I use this time here, then this is H cube over log, H cube times T. Okay, because
so the scale factor is growing exponentially with respect to the FRW normal time. And so what you find is that phi square at the same point, coincidence limit, grows like this. Okay, and there's factors of 4 pi's, which you can get right, but I did not. Okay, well, I mean, it's just you have to keep track of all the factors of pi's. So, okay, so this is crucial. This is going to be the starting point for the stochastic analysis that we'll do later. And so what's going on? Just a little bit of physics. So I still have that the say phi is zero. Okay, I never assume that phi at any vav. So I have a vav which is zero at a given point. But at a given point, I find that its variance is growing. So I have this scalar field all over. I set it up all to zero. Then I let inflation start. At some point, I ask the question, what is the probability that I find phi to have some value at a given space-time point? And I'll see that probability is growing, that the value, the range of values I can get grows. So I have a very, and if you wait until infinity, you'll get huge variance. Infinity. You'll get variance that just keeps on growing and growing. And at some point, the field value could be anything. This is a very unusual behavior compared to flat space, and it essentially summarizes the richness of the physics, the quantum physics, and the sitter space. Oh no, this is weird. Right. Okay, let's try it. Okay. Any question about this? Okay. So let's do, let me just do one more thing. Let's go beyond the coincidence limit, beyond coincidence. So let's take L to be finite. Okay. So then the 2-point in flat with M not equal to 0 is phi of x, phi of y here at two different points. But let's do, again, equal time. L finite, but let's do, for simplicity, let's look at equal time, just two different position in space. So this is 0 to infinity, dk, k squared, over the square root, k squared plus m squared, time my sine kl over kl. Okay. So that's the integral you need to evaluate in real space. It's easy to see that when kl is much greater than 1, for modes which are for KL much greater than 1, then this oscillates and this thing essentially average to 0. So really, you can just look at what the modes where K is much less than L. So you get 0 to 1 over L, dk, K square, and then, right. And then in the KL small limit, this is just 1. So that's it. Okay. So this has two behavior, depending again on the mass, but they're very similar. One goes like 1 over L square, and the other one goes like 1 over L cube. This is for K greater than M, K smaller than M. Okay. So here you just see in more detail that indeed, when you take L to 0, you take the coincidence limit, this thing is diverging. Diverging, and the behavior just changes whether you look at the wavelength greater or smaller than the mass.
Okay, so this is a standard flat space story. Let's redo the case for the sitter. Then again, you can just look at the it's really just dk over k. Again, you can just take directly the kl much smaller than one limit, because again, if you look at bigger k, this thing oscillates. So the integral is a question.
Smaller than one or bigger than one?
What I want to say is, what I meant here is when kl is greater than one, the integral vanish. Right. So sine of kl kills the integrand. So I use the limit where kl is much less than 1. Other questions? You can do these integrals exactly. You don't have to do all the approximation, but the point is just to get a physics here. And so phi x, phi y, again, doing this limit, it's the same thing. But now it's 1 over L. And it's, again, divergent in the IR, so I need to use my size of the universe, 1 over L prime. So it's the size of the universe, say, at the beginning. Presumably, actually, it could be a very small number. And then this is the distance I'm looking at. And so this ends up being, again, there's an h square, so it's h square log L over L prime. Doesn't really matter what the ref, it's really just, so what I get is a log of x minus y divided by some reference scale. Okay. So what is this saying? So this is saying that I take 2 points in the sitter space, and they can be as far away as each other as you want. There will always be some correlation between them. It doesn't die off. It goes like a log, so actually the 2 points are very far apart are still correlated. You may have seen this already in condensed matter classes. This is the behavior that you get at the critical point when you have, right? So this is a system where the correlation length is infinity. Okay? And so, And okay, and it's the source. And the fact is that so you see this in critical phenomena, and as you may have learned in these condensed matter class, what's happening here is that we have a scale invariance or conformal symmetry. Conformal symmetry. Okay. I'll stop. This is something I'm sure Matt will come back to, so just wanted to give you a little bit of flavor. So let's go back. So we have large scale correlation. So these are great if you want to. And sorry, it's way too hot. Yeah. So we have large scale correlation. And the idea is that these are great. They could give rise to our perturbation that we see today in our universe. Alrighty. Questions? All right. So what's the logic here? So what's going on? So one way you think about it, look at a fixed k. As the time evolves, the mode starts in flat space. Then there's a special time called horizon crossing. This is when, so we start at eta equal minus infinity, we're in flat. The mode thinks they're in flat space, if you choose a bunch of these vacua. Then arrives this horizon crossing time. Then after that, their amplitude is frozen. And the only thing that's happening is that the wavelength still is being stretched by the expansion of the universe. But the amplitude stays the same, and there's a variance. So it's not like the amplitude is always just the same number. It's a quantum mechanically varying number. There's some probability of getting some
value versus other, and the variance is calculated as this pi square. All right, let me now do quickly the massive case. And now we'll see why this actually cannot be the whole story. Actually, we'll need to include gravity and we'll need to include inflation. So the massive case, you can still solve the mode equation. Exactly. It's k squared, it's m squared. Equal to 0. So in the massive case, I have this extra factor here, m over h squared. And the solution to this equation is, in general, will be this is essentially just a Bessel's, this is Bessel's equation. So the solution is going to be a combination of Bessel functions. And the one that corresponds to the Bunch Davies vacua, I'll just give you the answer. You can check this, is minus pi eta over 2. The 2 is in here. Times Enkel function number 2 in our convention, actually. So these are the modes for the massive field where nu is the order parameter is 9, 4 minus m squared over h squared. Square root of all that. This is the order parameter for. Okay, and the normalization you get by checking the wrong skin, the usual story. Okay, so this is the solution to this equation, which is properly normalized. And it's not the only solution. So these h, right, the Enkel function h, nu, 1 is j, I think 1 is j, conventionally, j plus I, y. So these are Bessel function. And h2 is the complex conjugate of h1. It's j minus I, y. Yes? Can I not do what, sorry?
We can't read it. What does it say? It's the very first line on the board.
This?
Yes.
Logic. the logic of what's going on. Sorry.
Okay, could you explain that table again then? I did it again.
So the logic is that for a fixed, yeah, sorry, so fixed game, or a fixed moving number, start with time is minus infinity, then you're in fast space. As time moves forward, you get to a time theta star. Yeah, actually, I won't do that. This is horizon crossing. Thanks for asking. Horizon crossing. Okay, great. This is it. So what we say, the jargon, a bit confusing, but what we say is that we start in fast space, and then the mode crosses the horizon. Mode crosses the horizon when the co-moving when you satisfy this problem. And when the mode cross the horizon, then the very different behavior that I've been describing happens. So after that, amplitude is frozen. The variance, if you want. Yeah, pi squared becomes a constant. Pi squared.
Then what exactly happened at the crossing?
Right. Well, that's a good question. Up to now, then you have a sort of intermediary regime where you're evolving between the two. So you could compute things in the crossing, but we usually do the approximation that we're like what's going in before and after, and at the crossing, you have just a smooth transition between the two behavior. Other questions? Right, so this is for the massive case, and just to let you know quickly, the reason why this is the Bunch Davies vacua is that if I take again minus k eta to be much greater than 1, then you can check that the Enkel function here, Mathematica, just expand this for large x, this goes like e to the I k eta. Okay, so these are the Bunch Davies modes. These are the modes. This is the choice of Enkel function such that in the far past, I only have negative or positive frequency, negative frequency modes. Okay? And similarly, I'm not going to go to the step. You can compute pi squared k. So it's just
the usual thing, vk square, vk over 2a square. So now if I use v, I need to, if I use these guys v here, I need to divide by a for phi. And that's just equal to pi eta square over 4 a square eta times these two, these two guys. Okay, so this is the 1 point, 2 point function for phi k at equal time. Say, but if you were to do it at different times, then you'll just have eta 1 times eta 2, you have a of eta 1 times a of eta 2, and so forth. Okay? Now, interestingly, the behavior is different in this limit because I can, so let's say I expand, so for k eta much greater than 1, this again reproduces flat space. But this time it will produce flat space for a massive field. So it'll get the, it will get the mass right. So yeah, so that's just, this reproduces flat space. But in the limit, which is the most interesting one, in this limit, then you can work out what this guys do. It's also, to simplify, we also often approximate, sorry, nu, we approximate it to be this, the order parameter. That is, we expand nu for m much less than h. Then the order parameter is almost 3/2. By the way, I should have said. So you know, this also reproduces the massless case. If you put m equals 0, then the order parameter is 3/2. And the Hankel function of 3/2 is exactly 1 minus I, the thing we wrote before. Okay, so you can check that h of 3/2, say 2, is like, there's factors here, but it's 1 minus ik eta times e to the ik. Okay, so when the mass is 0, it means that the Hankel function has order parameter 3/2. Okay, so the mass case is just more general. And yeah, and then we can expand for small mass compared to h. This is going to be very similar to the slow approximation, which I will start next class, to the case where we're not in the city space. Right, so there's a mass parameter here, delta. And so we just assume that m was much smaller than a, so delta is much smaller than 1. So you can expand this guy. When you do these two, when you approximate this to this, so you expand as a function of delta, and you expand as a function of k eta, then this is quite simple. This two-point function simplifies dramatically, and it just becomes h square over 2kq minus k eta times 2 delta. So if delta equals 0, you're in a massless case, you reproduce the result we had before. Okay. But if you have a mass, you get an extra piece. And what's important about that extra piece is that it means that actually now it's no longer constant. It's not frozen, really. This is not a variable. This is not something that really is constant. Because when you take eta to 0, this goes to 0. Okay, so in future, so what's happening is I'm getting these fluctuations. They cross the horizon, then they freeze, parentheses. But then as time goes on, there's still a mass in the system. So the mass dampens all these large scale fluctuations. And at the end of the day, there's nothing left. Okay. So this is actually means that really this is not going to be the thing that's going to give rise to our perturbation. I mean, it's going to be the source, but we're going to have to do some extra step in order to get. Because remember, what we want to do is we want to do inflation here, say. We want to generate some kind of perturbation. Then there's like all sort of physics we don't know. Grand unified theory, a quark gluon, well, we know the quark gluon plasma a bit, but still. Also cosmic string, whatever. A lot of things can happen that nobody has any clue what's going on. Then finally here, we know what's going on. It's called BBN. Then there's the CMB. But the idea is that these fluctuations are supposed to go here and stay like this, come back here, and then we're supposed to here observe them. Okay. This is kind of amazing that at all that this could be possible, that they could, we could generate perturbation and inflation, that they would be undisturbed through all sort of things we don't know.
This is physics, unknown physics. And then we will observe them just as they were. So this is a bit amazing, and this will be you have to define the right variable in order for this to be true. And this is not, for a massive field, it's not going to be true. In fact, a massive field fluctuation, they won't even survive inflation. You'll create them, but they will die off. They'll die off like very quickly as the mass. I mean, it depends. Of course, if the mass is really, really small, then they can last for a long time. But in general, they'll disappear. Okay? Any questions? And the magic actually is, in order to get these guys to really stay constant, we're going to have to turn on gravity. So it turns out that it's really important that we do this quantizing procedure in the presence of gravity. And so that's why in some ways you can think of this as quantum gravity, because it's the simplest possible quantum gravity. But really, we're going to have to quantize gravity in order to find a variable, to find a perturbation that does remain constant. Okay. Right. So I can, just to finish the story, I can integrate this over k's to get the two-point in the real space. Now, I could do it with a UV cutoff, but actually this formula here that I wrote is really only valid for this, right? I had to assume that. Okay, so since I'm going to plug that in here, I should not integrate over k goes to infinity. So I'm just going to integrate to -1 over eta to 0. And now this is not divergent anymore in the infrared. It's perfectly well behaved. And so this is h squared. So there's minus eta to delta. And then there's just going to be k to the, what is it, 2 or? Yeah, 2 delta minus 1. Okay, so when delta, when it was massless, it was 1 over k. But now that it has a mass, it's fine. And so this actually gives you something which is h squared over delta, roughly, up to factors. Okay, or h. These are all results that you can rederive in the stochastic formalism that I think that we'll introduce later. Just to finish, I think this is my last about the sitter before we move on to the case where we actually break time diffeomorphism. Okay. Note that this is finite now; it's not infinite, but it's still in principle very big. If m is much smaller than h, which is anyway what we had to we assume to get this answer, then you find that this is still a huge variance. So the field is still, even in the massive case, the field is still varying quite wildly compared to the flat space. And one thing also, by the way, you may have noticed, the behavior changes quite dramatically when m becomes greater than 3/2 h, right? This order parameter becomes imaginary when the mass is large. So in the sitter space, we usually call the low mass case the complementary series, and the high mass case the principal series. They have very different behavior. But essentially, the large mass case essentially reduces to flat space. At some point, if the mass is really, really large, you get flat space. The field doesn't know. Its Compton wavelength is much smaller than the horizon, so it doesn't know that it's living in the sitter. Question? Yep. I just use these two. So this one and that one. Everywhere. So I used it. So this is the exact thing. And I expand these two guys for small and for the super horizon mode. And I extend the order parameter in this for a small mass. When you do that, then this expression reduces to that. And that's it. That's the level. So there are corrections to this proportional to higher power of this guy, and there are correction higher power of delta. So this is think of this is a small parameter and this is a small parameter.
And in the next
So at the next, I did not. So I'm just saying that if I integrate this over all k, I should not. I should remember that this is only true for this in this case. So I should not integrate to infinity. I should integrate to minus one. Right. But otherwise, there's no approximation. There's missing factor of 2 pi, but otherwise, it's good. Okay, so now let's start with inflation.
The center space is like the it's the approximate essentially limit when you have exact scale invariance and time translation is a good symmetry. But this is actually not going to give you, it doesn't evolve in time, so it's not going to give you a real cosmology. And also, really, like what we have done up to now is we've done the case where phi is 0, the VEV of phi is 0, and we just have a cosmological constant, positive CC. So if you write this as a potential, what we've done really is we consider some m squared phi squared potential plus some constant to give me the Sitter space. And I was just sitting right here. Okay? And I found that the field fluctuates and does all kind of fun things. But and in fact, this is very closely related to the original model of inflation of Gut back in the 80s. But the idea is, maybe you could get inflation from this, maybe. But you definitely do get accelerated universe. But in order, as Matt will describe more, you'll have to, when you, in order to end inflation, you would need to tunnel to a different vacua. And that's actually very hard to get a, just doing that to get a model that gives rise to the right perturbation is not going to work. Okay. So inflation actually, while it gives you inflation, it doesn't give rise to the perturbation, and is so you need to do more steps. So what we could do instead, so this is not going to get, that does not really work, so then we'll do what is called new inflation. Okay. And new inflation, this is more called chaotic inflation, but they're really, I think, in the same spirit. It's called slow roll models. But essentially, the idea is, I could just start. Instead of starting at phi equals 0, let me just start here at some phi of t. Then I will just naturally go down. And the idea is, as long as I go down slowly enough, which is not obvious this is going to happen with this potential, but as long as I go down slowly enough, then you can show that the universe will be still having this accelerated expansion, and then you'll generate perturbations. Okay. Now there are many, many different ways to do this. So this is like a case where it's m squared phi squared, say plus a constant again. I put my v of phi here. You actually can drop the constant. You can just do m squared phi squared, and you get right model inflation. So these are chaotic models. Chaotic. Is it spelled? Inflation, which are models essentially of the type just phi lambda with some power. Then there are models more like you have a flat part of the potential and then suddenly becomes steep. So this is really what people would call new inflation. This was the original one that was proposed. And the idea here is you're slowly rolling this potential. You can have a hybrid model where you're going down a very flat direction. Now there are two fields. They're going down a very flat direction, and then suddenly one of the direction becomes tachyonic. I'm not sure I'm drawing this very nicely. Let me try to draw it again. So I have a valley, and my field is going down this valley. Okay, but then at some point the valley becomes a cliff, So I'm going down here, but of course now it becomes unstable, and so I just drop. Okay.
So this could be a model which inflates while it's in the valley. It's going down, the potential is dropping, but then eventually drops and then inflation ends. So there's a plethora of model. They all have slightly different prediction. This is actually a flaw really with the sitter because this is really a flaw because it loses a little bit of predictivity because there's many, many different models of inflation, and actually you can arrange things that you can pretty much match a lot of the thing that WMAP sees in the fine details. I mean, all of these models will agree that they give you scale invariance to first order, but they give small deviation from scale invariance, and then you can try to get, you can really do all sorts of stuff. So this is an industry called inflationary model building. Okay. So there's many different VFI that you can choose that would work. You can even choose different function of the kinetic term. All of this guys was assuming the standard kinetic term, del phi squared. But you could actually look at models where you have a generic function of del phi squared times phi. You can change the kinetic term if you want. So these also works. Yes?
So a question about, if this field is quantized, what would we see experimentally?
So this is again the question of how did these modes go from being a quantum operator to a classical operator? Yeah, so I think I can, I don't have, this is a tough question, which I think is partially answered, and I don't think I can really go too in much detail. But the idea is you can look at how is the field behaving. So you can, for the growing mode. And what's happening is that the mode become real when you're in super horizon scale. So phi k, sorry. Should really look at the mode. Yeah, so anyway, so the modes become real. And so what happens is you can calculate the commutator of phi and at two different times. And you'll find that for the growing modes, as you wait long enough, the fields start commuting with itself at different times. So it starts behaving classically. So essentially you're just like, you're producing all these waves, and you can think of them as you're just having a populating very large particle numbers, and they start to behave like classical perturbations. It's not really a completely satisfactory answer, though, because you still say, well, okay, but when we measure it, there should be some kind of decoherence effect and so forth. And there are people studying this, but it's definitely not even right now. It's not in textbooks. You know, it's something that people still a little bit sketchy. But but decoherence is always a bit sketchy, I find. So it's a quantum state. I mean, the question can be asked even at LHC. You calculate proton-proton decays, and then they produce kaons or pions and all sort of things. When you do the computation, everything is quantum. But when we observe these guys, they're actually classical. So, and the decoherence process can be worked out, but it's hard. You know, it's not always easy. And so, I don't think I can give justice to that in this class, but essentially it's something like that. It should be similar. All right, So next time, probably that's a good point to end. So next time we'll start doing inflation, and now also I'll put gravity in, because now I'm just not gonna do, essentially now I was just doing a constant de Sitter space, and gravity, M Planck was taken to infinity. Now, again, the thing we see in the CMB depends on M Planck. It really is a gravity effect, and since I'm doing quantum, it in some sense is a quantum gravity effect. Okay. If you take M Planck to infinity, there would be none of this fluctuations business. So we'll put gravity back in, and then we'll just look at these plural models a bit, look at how phi goes function of time, and then do perturbation theory. So that's going to be essentially the plan for beginning of next week. All right. Okay, enjoy your weekend.